Criticism. One of the hardest things that we humans can endure is criticism from someone else. It hurts, we think. But how is it that criticism is actually the best gift that you can ever receive? See, it's not if what you're concerned about is right and wrong. If your mind says, that's not true, I'm not that. I'm not a liar if someone calls you that. Or if someone says, you're mean. And your mind finds all the ways that that person is wrong. Then that is you being concerned with right and wrong. But if what you're concerned about is growth and self-realization, then criticism can be the best gift of all. What could someone say to me that wouldn't be true? Nothing. If someone calls me unkind, or not nice, or inconsiderate, if I wait a moment, I can find where that's true in me. I can find it. And if someone who I really care about says something to me that I find harsh or hard to hear, then I can be honest and say, that's hard for me. Can you explain to me more fully how you see me that way? I want to know. I want to learn about me through your eyes. Help me. So how is it that criticism can be the best gift you ever received?
Hey, Debbie, when you were mentioning about criticism being the best gift, I remember one time talking to my directing partner. We were talking about something, and I went to mention something to him, and he snapped at me and said, you're the most unfocused person I've ever met. And I went, what? Right? And I couldn't understand that because I, you know, do all the things that I do. But to him, his perspective is that by doing all the things that I do makes me unfocused rather than being multifocused on various things. To his perspective, it was unfocused, right? And I never thought of it that from that perspective. And it took me a second. What took me aback when he first said that. But when I understood that perspective, I was like, huh. So like some people think of me as a very grounded person, but other people think of me as scattered in other ways. So it's interesting to see how, you know, one meaning can have many different layers and many different variables.
Oh, Sage, thank you. I love that. And I love that you said it took me a minute. Yeah, you know, the more comfortable we get with criticism, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's always going to be, you know, yeah, bring it on, criticize the hell out of me, I'm ready, you know. I mean, I want to get to that point. And in fact, I do invite that from people in my life, particularly someone like my daughter, who I spend a lot of time with. She's 17, and she seems to really see me in a way. Obviously, she sees me in a way that I don't see me. You see, when we walk around thinking this is who I am and this is what I put out in the world, and then someone comes along and clashes and says that, you know, you're scattered. And that goes against the story you have about yourself. It's jarring. It's jarring. You know, I share self-inquiry with people, and I talk about how it brings peace to my life and how it increases improves the relationship with my children. And then my daughter goes and says something to me, you're really judgmental. You're kind of harsh. I'm like, ouch. No, I'm not. I work on myself. I'm not that. So at first I'm like, no, no. And then I have to pause and go, oh, okay. Tell me more. Tell me how I'm harsh. I want to know, because I don't see me that way. And then when she's able, when I give her that freedom, when I invite it, it doesn't have to, people then don't come at you so hard. It's the funny thing. When you're actually open to hearing something from someone and you go, huh, well, that's something I didn't know about myself, or something I didn't think about myself, or I know I've been that way in the past. I thought I'd grown from there. Tell me more. And it does hurt. You have to let go. You have to let go in order to really hear someone say something to you. And you have to let go of the agenda of how they need to give it to you in the package that you want. I had that story for 20 years with my husband. You know, if only he would say it to me nicely. Well, the way he's been delivering it has been a pure reflection of how I've been delivering that same message to myself. So when I'm truly ready to hear things in a softer way, then I will get things in a softer way. But in the meantime, I'm a tough customer. So I need to hear things in a way that will actually jar me out of my sleep. And sometimes that looks like my daughter saying, "You're really harsh." Thanks so much for sharing, Sage, and that how you grew from that and learned and you were able to be open. It's inspiring. Hello, Kevin. Thank you. Yes. Okay, so there's two parts. There's the criticism we receive and the criticism we give out. Both actually are invitations for us to get closer to ourselves. So the criticism we receive, it hurts sometimes. And that's your cue that it's something for you to look at. If you defend, you're missing out. You're missing out on some wonderful education about you. You're missing out on a pathway, a direct pathway to getting closer to you. Because when it hurts, you're defending. And when you're defending, you believe it. There's something about what that person is saying that you believe. It's hard. It's hard because we believe that to be positive and wonderful offerings and, you know, spirits of light in the world and positivity, that criticism has no place in there. But that's not freedom. That's a rule. Can you live in a world where there's no rules for your happiness? Where you could see every single thing in this life as a gift for you rather than something that's happening to you? And I want to say something on criticism that we give out on the next segment. And so how can the criticism that we give out also be for our benefit, also be an offering to ourselves, not to others? It's never about the other person, ever. If I find myself criticizing someone internally in my mind, instead of giving it to someone, I give it to me. So I write it down. I ask 4 questions, and I turn it around. Simple as that. And so I use the criticism that arises in me because I'm human. We all do it. Even if we push it down real fast and talk ourselves out of it, it's there. So I use it. I don't stamp it down anymore. Don't tell me I'm wrong for thinking that. I don't replace it with positive thinking. I use it. I use it to get closer to me. Because that thought that I have about that person is the pain that's happening inside of me. And when I push it down, it's no different than when I say to a young child that they're wrong for feeling upset about something. We've been doing that our whole lives. These thoughts that we have, these judgments, they're our precious ones. They're precious, darling children thoughts that we can meet with understanding. Rather than saying that I'm wrong for thinking critical thoughts and they're wrong for thinking critical thoughts and that person's wrong for saying what they're saying and they should only say it in this way, that perpetuates the message that there's something wrong with us. And there isn't. Fighting the critical mind will only grow it. Meeting the critical mind with understanding will not silence it. But when you're met with understanding, doesn't that just make you feel a little more relaxed? Meeting that critical mind with understanding will relax it. It will finally be heard. That's all it is an upset place inside of you. So, yeah. Using that criticism that we want to give out to others as a pathway to our own freedom. That's the invitation.
Debbie, when you were saying before about, like, you know, not seeing yourself a certain way, there's a thing, I don't know if you've heard it before, I love it. It's called Johari's window. It's a psychological concept that there's four parts of the self. The four parts of the self are the public persona, the part that you see about you and others see about you. The hidden persona, the part of you that you see about you but others don't see about you. The blind persona, the part other people see about you but you can't see. And then the unknown self, the part you'll never see about you and others will never see about you, that part that could always emerge at any time and you're never quite sure where that part is within us. That's the part that essentially that only Creator sees of us, right? And those are the four window panes of Johari's window. But I love that concept because it makes us realize that the self is bigger than what we want it to be.
Sage, thank you so much for sharing that with me. I have to break it down because it's so huge. So Johari's window, I think is what it's called. And so the four panes, the four personas. So the public one, let's talk about that one for a moment. The public persona that everyone sees. It's the persona I put out there. It's my personality. This is my interpretation. And I invite you, Sage, to enter into this conversation with me because I would love to deconstruct it. And it sounds like you have a fairly thorough understanding. So the public persona, the one that I put out to the world, the acceptable part of me, the one that follows the rules, the one that says please and thank you, and I apologize, and oh, excuse me. Those things that we need to have, in fact, to exist in the culture that we live in, the conditioned self. And when I'm aware of it, you see, I think for me, it's when I'm awake to the public persona, then I can play the part, the one that says, I agree, I'm going to make money and I'm going to pay my mortgage and pay my taxes. And I agree that I'm going to get a job and I'm going to follow the rules of traffic so that we can all, drive safely. When I'm awake to it, it's a part that I play that is necessary to some degree to exist in this culture. And when I'm awake to it, it doesn't have to control me. I don't have to be a slave to it. It's just a part I play. So then there's that hidden persona, the one that I see that others don't. And I reflected on this on my walk. My interpretation is that of that is that that's the place that I reach in meditation. That's the place I reach when I'm clear. There is a silent observer in me. It's quiet. And I'm when I touch it, I'm so filled with love for me and for everyone around me, and I feel alone and I feel connected. And that aloneness is good. I don't need approval when I touch that place. And your story of me is delightful, and it has nothing to do with me. I love that you love me, and that's your experience. And I love that you don't love me, and that's completely your experience. When I'm with me, it's a whole universe in there. I'm at home. It's a delightful place to visit. Then there's the blind persona, the one that others see that I don't. And therein is the gift of criticism, right there. It's difficult to touch it. How is criticism a gift? Because you can't know all the parts of you on your own. You can't. And I love how this explains that part. There's a part of me that I cannot possibly see on my own. It's impossible. I need the Sangha. I need other people to show me all of me. I need you. And if I dictate how that part will be shown to me that I'm going to miss out. If I only listen when someone delivers a message to me in the nice, sweet package that I want, that I deem as comfortable, then I am missing out. And for me, I want to see all parts that I possibly can. And I know that I can't. I know that there will be always something missing. That's the journey. That's the human journey. But I want to see what I can, what's possible. I want to learn about me. So through you, I get to learn and see. So thank you so much, Sage, for explaining this and showing this to me. The blind persona is the gift of criticism. And then the unknown persona, the one that I can't see and no one else can either. The creator, the universe, the life, the thing that is completely without my control. I love this depiction because this is the part that I am not the doer. I'm not the doer. There's a huge part of me that I'm not the doer of. And it's where I relinquish the need to even control. This is where I'm open to all possibilities of life. If I'm open, then I'm open to being a chess piece on the board, and that I'm just moved from here to there to there. And that's where I can meet my inner critic as well, recognizing that if I'm moved here and I show up in the world in this way, I was put there for a reason, to be a gift to you, to be a gift to me. That's where I can meet the terrors of life with flexibility. I can just be open to being moved around the chessboard, and that it's not all for me to know. This is where I open my hands and let go to life. It's an opening, a letting go place.
Debbie, thank you for that segment on criticism seen as a gift. And I totally agree with you that there's something about the gift that is sometimes in disguise. It's the unlikely thing, unlikely places we find gifts. And feedback or criticism, however a person would choose to term it, gives us the kind of insight that I think we otherwise wouldn't have. And my mother taught this lesson to me repeatedly when I was younger. And the way it would go is she would have a role in doing some kind of leadership in the community, whether it was speaking or some kind of outreach that she did, and we'd come along with her. And then after it was over, she'd say, okay, I need your honest feedback. I need you to tell me how it affected you and give me your point of view.
That's beautiful. That's a gift, isn't it? To be open to hearing what your children have to say about you. You know, what a wonderful experience as a child to go through, because not only are you witnessing your mother being open, as a child, you're recognizing that your point of view counts and is valuable. It's beautiful.
Debbie, I have a follow-up question about the criticism seen as a gift, and that is, maybe you've already addressed it, but it seemed like what you were talking about in your segment was the criticism from without. And I was curious as to how you would address the criticism from within and how you interact with that criticism when it's coming from yourself, and how we all often have to navigate, and just the type of dialogue and sorting through to even discover the gifts in our own inner critic, but also just how we engage it. So looking forward to hearing your response on that. Thank you.
Mohawk Mama Soul. Is that what you're, I love it. If I've got your name correct. How to address the inner critic. You know, there's a few different ways, but one way that I'm entering into lately is to love her. To love her for trying to protect me. So when I go in and I see the one who's criticizing, when I see her, the one who is so harsh, I look at her and I see that she's afraid. And I see that she's learned throughout my life experience that she has a role to do, which is to protect me. And who is she criticizing? Who's that inner critic criticizing and looking at? So at any given situation, it might be different. So recently, I had a story that I showed up as an anxious, crazy person. And so I look at that one that's anxious and crazy, the one that I think is anxious and crazy. I see these parts in me. You see it? You see where you see your inner critic, that part of you, and then look at the part that the inner critic is attacking. What is good, true, and beautiful about that anxious, crazy one, the one that showed up that way? And I see her. In my situation, I see her. And she's trying her best. She cares so much about doing things right. That anxious, crazy one is trying to get along in the world, trying to keep up. And then I see the critic looking at her with disdain, giving her a laundry list of things to do and not do. And I see both of them with love because they're both just trying to make it in this world. The more that I can meet all the parts of me with understanding and not with the agenda to change, I would no more try to change that inner critic than I would try to change the anxious, crazy one. The inner critic is telling me things that if I listen, I can learn from. And I can love her. The more we learn to love these precious parts of us, the more they won't have to scream at us. The more they can just be part of the tide that's within us. So, in this space, I can meet my inner critic with love and understanding. And she can abide in me. And she can abide in me just like the one who is kind and loving can abide in me. There's no part of me that needs to be ejected or changed or forcibly removed or shamed. So many parts of me that were born over the years out of safety and protection, and that's all that inner critic is trying to do. So I just meet her with understanding and love and gratitude. And then I can meet the one that she's criticizing and look at her. The one that she thinks is not good enough. The one that she's afraid is going to get hurt. And I can look at her closely and love her too for showing up just the way she does sometimes. When we begin to meet our inner critics with understanding and love and compassion, then no one can ever hurt you. If someone comes at you with criticism, you can understand it. And you can greet it with love and compassion because you know where it's coming from. You understand it. Get close to your inner critic. Get to know him or her. Cuddle up, listen, look. Hear what they're trying to say. What's their motive? Protection, love. Always. So when someone criticizes you, you can hear that too.
Hey, Debbie. Yeah, so thanks for your insights on the Jahari's window. I love listening to it. It's very cool. But I love the when you said that there's a huge part of me that I am not the doer of, you know, in reference to the unknown self. I also like to call that's my personal thing. I like to call that part of the self the potential self or the undiscovered country or the undiscovered self. It's the part of us that we all have potentialities and abilities and talents and, you know, and weaknesses that we can't even imagine, you know, until certain possibilities come up. I mean, just YouTube alone shows that, like, before YouTube existed, there were people who never knew that they could be YouTubers, you know, because there was no such thing. But there's that great poem that says, "My life is but a weaving between my God and me. I only choose the colors. He weaveth steadily. Sometimes he weaveth sorrow, and I in foolish pride forget I see the under and he the overside."
Debbie, I'm definitely in line with this paradigm. You know, this mindset that you're talking about cannot be produced quickly. And you're right, it is cultivated. It doesn't come natural to us. But through time and the nurture of oneself, you know, our mindset can begin to inform us with new ways to speak to ourselves and listen to ourselves and speak to others and listen to others. And it can be of great benefit when even our language begins to shift. But only through the careful cultivation of listening without need to go into reactionary mode and put up a defense. But it is so needful to embrace the whole self. You know, because there are so many things when I look back in my life that developed that voice in me, and I can.
Oh my goodness, thank you for calling in. You said things in such an eloquent, you said all of that, your words were so beautiful, coupled with your most alluring, lovely, kind, generous voice, just so eloquently put into words what I've had to take several segments to try to get to. And part of it's because I think and talk at the same time. So what you hear from me on this place they call a station, is my process, is me processing in action. I don't presume to know everything. I need you all to, you know, trigger those parts in me that and ignite my inspiration that gets me to look inside for myself. I can't do this alone, and yet I am alone. And I just appreciate the part that you play in my seeing today. Oh, yeah, the embracing the whole self. Just imagine if we could do that. Sometimes I think that I have, and then something shows up that allows me to see a precious one that I've left behind, and I get the opportunity to go back through the fire. You know those times that we think we've dealt with something? Geez, I've dealt with this. Why is this coming up again? You know, it's not it again. It's it on a deeper level, and it's because you don't want to leave anyone behind. There's no part of you that you want to leave behind. You know, the image I have in my mind is like a burning building, and I have precious ones hidden in corners in there. And, you know, just when you think you've got them all out, there's someone else crying for your help, that little child, that little upset one that wasn't listened to. And I get the opportunity whenever I feel triggered or defensive or upset to go back into the fire and retrieve one of the little ones and pull them up on my lap and carry them through. And I like the idea of the fire because that's what it feels like. There's a burning that happens. When you wake up to what you do in your life, when you believe these things, when you think that people are here, you know, or should be saying or doing things in such a way that are comfortable for you, and then you wake up. You wake up, you get to walk into the stream of awakening and notice that it's no one's job to do anything. It's no one's job to please you, to be kind to you, to be approving of you, to be supportive of you. It's lovely when it happens, but it's not their job to do it. It's your job. And when you wake up to how you've been separating from yourself and separating yourself from love, it burns at first. And when we can allow the burn to happen, then like a phoenix, we can burn and birth into something brand new. And it feels very uncertain at first because we've literally let an identity burn. And now, who are we without this cloak of demands on the world? Who are we without that? Often it feels very raw. And you kind of walk around like a baby with these new eyes. And it can feel vulnerable for a while because we're used to having the identity cloaking us, making us feel warm and comfortable, and yet not noticing that it's a cloak of spikes. Not noticing the pain that cloak is actually causing us. And then you take it off and you let it go. And you've got raw skin. And yet, through that rawness is the most strength and empowerment that you'll ever know, because love, that's what love is. It's impenetrable. We're just forgetters. We forget that.
My psychologist says that if somebody's pointing the finger at you, then there's three fingers pointing back at themselves. So I try to remember that as a sort of an image for, you know, when people are being critical as a means of emotional projection. And I had a moment with my dad last night where I noticed in our dynamic that criticism, and I know where it comes from, and I really lost patience with him about it though. And said, "Don't project your daddy issues onto me." He actually took it pretty well. I think he was taken aback a little bit, but my dad's pretty out there. And I'm pretty sure he knows what I mean. You know, like, I think he's got insecurities and his dad's got creative insecurities and his dad did. So, yeah, you know, it's a thing.
Lulu, I like that. I might use that on my husband. Don't project your husband issues onto me. just joking. Kinda.
Hey, Debbie. Rambling Diva here. I don't think all criticism is bad. I as an adult, at almost 60 years old, I don't subscribe to the way that I was raised necessarily. However, I do feel that there are times and places for constructive criticism. If it's a negative behavior, then I don't subscribe to that. Now, the situation that I was referring to was not something that happened at work in a workplace setting. It was between three friends. And the person that was doing the criticizing has to be, there's going to be a part two, excuse me. Hey, Debbie, I'm Rambly Diva, part two. As I was saying, this actually happened between myself and two friends. And the friend that did the criticizing meant it to be very harmful to myself. Honestly, she's two-faced. She will love me to death in person and talk behind my back. And so that was just an example that I had as far as being criticized. I guess it should have probably been more that it was a negative behavior. Hey, Debbie, part three. Okay, as far as criticism goes, I don't have a problem with constructive criticism whatsoever, whether it's in a personal setting or whether it's in a work setting. Like I said, I don't still believe the way that I was raised. However, I do believe in constructive and not being a negative factor or a negative nanny, whatever you want to call it. I'm a very positive person, and that's how I try to treat people, is with positivity. Rambling Diva again. Okay, and as far as peace with my inner self, very much I am at peace with who I am, peace with who I have been, peace with who I am now. I don't have a problem with it. And like I said, if somebody wants to be critical of me, that's great. But I will respond to non-judgment or constructive criticism better than if I'm just attacked. And that particular friend attacked. So maybe I used a bad example.
Oh, Rambling Diva, thank you for calling in and for setting the record straight for yourself, the story that I didn't mean to misinterpret. I certainly am not, from my perspective, thinking that after three or four call-ins, a minute each, that I know you and that I know the whole story that encompasses you. I don't presume that. Really, I use the call-ins as bouncing off, you know, as a springboard to continue my own exploration of these topics. But because I ended up speaking what it sounded like was directly to you, and what I really meant was to you, whoever's listening. So, for that misunderstanding, I apologize. And I also want to say, too, that I don't know if you listened to Sage's call-in. I think it was called Johara's? Oh, shoot, I've forgotten. Window, something like that. Where he talks about the self, the different parts of the self. And this is really the level that I'm talking about when it comes to criticism. I'm not talking about it on the level of, societal, public persona level, because there's that level, which of course we would all agree that it's nice to be nice and to be kind to each other, and please and thank you is nice to use. I'm not trying to be condescending about those things. I participate in that because I want to get along with people. I want to go to a store and smile and do that kind of thing. What I'm talking about with this exploration of our getting okay with criticism is about that place, that part of us that we don't see on our own. There's parts of us that we can't see unless it's reflected from someone else. So to speak in kind of woo-woo terms, there is no self. We are an embodiment. The world is a projection of our thinking and thoughts and beliefs. You know, there is more than what you can see and touch, and yet reality rules in many ways, and we fight reality. So I'm saying these kinds of terms so that you know that this is where I'm coming from when I ask questions, when I contemplate. So on one level, yes, people shouldn't criticize each other unless it's constructive. And on another level, what can I use from that criticism to wake me up to parts of myself that I'm not seeing? So again, this exploration isn't about right and wrong, and I'm not saying you're saying it's about right and wrong. It's not about whether you ever share anything, and you don't have to do this. This is my exploration. A friend says something to me that's rude or hurtful. I use that as an opportunity to learn about me, to get closer to me, to look in, to meditate, to become aware, to wake up, to enlighten myself to a higher plane. I really want to use the woo-woo terms so you know where I'm coming from. So you know I'm not talking about it from just plain old people shouldn't criticize kind of place. Okay, if you have any other further questions, I just invite you to keep calling in. You know, if it takes 4 or 5 call-ins for you to get what you want to say out, I get it. Look at me, I'm at 4.5 minutes. I meant to have a 1 minute response. So feel free, call in anytime, as many times as you want.
Debbie, this is Fifi from Wonderfully Made, and I absolutely love what you said about meeting the inner critic with understanding, because there have been times with my perfectionist tendencies that I've made observations, others have definitely made observations, and it is that I'm maybe too hard on myself, and so then it becomes about criticizing me for having an inner critic or for criticizing myself. And it's this terrible cycle of, oh my gosh, you're so negative, and it's not healthy. And I just really appreciate the gentle observation of that this inner critic wants to protect and does serve some purpose. So thank you so much. It just felt so liberating to hear.
Hello, Fifi. Well, I am so gratified to know that what I've been saying is coming across in a gentle way, because I too am someone who has been told that I'm hard on myself. Oh my goodness, many, many, many times. For the longest time, I thought it was just people who knew me really well. And then I started to notice that people who only had one conversation with me would say something like, wow, you don't be so hard on yourself, or you're being really hard on yourself, I think. It's happened on Anchor. Paul Monty said it to me. Yeah, people who I've had just a few conversations have said, I think you're being hard on yourself. So it is something that I too look at, and I would in the past say I'm working on, but I'm noticing the less I concentrate on trying to fix me, you know, work on me, the easier I'm becoming on me. The more I'm letting myself off the hook for not being perfect. So now when someone says, wow, you're being hard on yourself, I notice that instead of going, oh, great, here I am doing it again, I kind of do a light chuckle and go, oh, yeah, I do that sometimes. You know, it's just the way of it. It's starting to loosen. And I imagine there'll be a part of me that will always be a little hard on me because it comes from a place of, you know, wanting to do well in life, wanting to do my best. And so I'm noticing that the undercurrent of me being hard on me often is coming from a good place. And so then I'll think being hard on me will make me be a better person. And now I get to question that. I can ask myself, is that true? Being hard on me will make me a better person. Will ensure that I won't screw up next time. Is that true? No, it's not true because I've been hard on me my whole life and I keep messing up. But how do I react? How do I live my life when I believe that being hard on me will ensure that I don't screw up next time or that I will be this great person or something? I get really hard on me and I get hard on everyone around me as well. Because I notice them not being so hard on themselves, and how come they can get away with such things? You know, there's this sort of way of being in the world, and I notice I have a constant tension in my shoulders, and my jaw is tight, and my hands clench, and, you know, my stomach has a knot in it. Any time I make a mistake, I just right away, and then I might say a sorry a lot to people. I'm so sorry, I didn't mean, and then they're looking at me, yeah, okay, that's fine. You know, I apologize a lot. I verbalize me being hard on me. And so it just trickles out to all areas of my life. I'm afraid if I'm not hard on me, then I'm just going to go around screwing up all the time. Those kinds of thoughts. But who or what would I be? What would my life be like if I didn't believe that being hard on me was the way to making sure that I don't make mistakes? What would life be like if I didn't have that? Just find one situation where you're hard on you and then... who would you be if you didn't need to be that way? And I'd notice a lot softer relationship to me. And I'm also really kind to the one that's hard on me. I can see why they're doing it. I can see why the part of me is doing that. And so this is just self-inquiry, asking you these questions. You know, we are feeling our thoughts. So when you're feeling anxiety, ask yourself, what am I thinking right now? And then you get to question it. Notice what your life is like with it. See who you'd be without it. Turn the thought around. Being kind to me is the way to ensure I am improving. Being kind to me. It's okay, Debbie. You tried your best. Better luck next time. What can you learn from this? With a soft voice, you see? So we can, that's what I mean by we can get closer to ourselves with this critical thinking. I hope that wasn't too long and rambly for you. So something you said in that last part, in the part two, when you said, I was raised to not criticize people. That alerted me to something, and I invite you to notice how we create rules for life, often based on the way we were raised. You know, I was raised to not criticize. So a rule born out of that is that criticism is bad, or people shouldn't criticize one another. So criticism is bad. When we believe that is true, when we walk around with a filter of criticism is bad, what happens inside when we're faced with criticism? You know, this is not about right and wrong. You and I could intellectually, or anyone on here, we could have an intellectual conversation about the merits or the merits of feedback as opposed to the merits of criticism and how constructive criticism is great and destructive criticism pulls you down. We could talk about that till we're blue in the face. But I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in freedom. My freedom, your freedom, from the confines of the way that we put our rules upon life and how that affects us. Because people don't play by our rules. The people you work with don't play by your rules.
They won't. Nobody will. None of us in this world will listen to you about how to live well. We just won't. So I don't come onto my station, for instance, and give advice to people on how to live their life well, because I don't know the answer to that. I don't even live by my own advice. Why would I think to give it out to anyone else? You know, I have enough of a job to live well in my own life. But what happens inside of you when you walk around with the rule for life that criticism is bad, and then you're faced with it?
And I'll go one step further. How is the criticism that is the hardest to hear the biggest gift? That criticism that stings you, that really makes you angry, how is that a gift to you?